Chapter 4. There were probably places Jesse wanted to be even less than here, but he just couldn't think of any at the moment. When he pulled his new Ford Explorer into the church parking lot and took his hands off the wheel, he noticed they were shaking worse than they had been when Bascom, White, and Bella were in his office, or earlier, when he'd been standing before his steam-clouded bathroom mirror. Then he'd been studying the three-day growth of salt-and-pepper stubble along his angular jawline and square chin, and the taut skin of his still-handsome face. He ran his fingers through his thick hair, found the gray creeping in there, too. He'd looked everywhere in the mirror except directly into his own eyes, because all he saw there was condemnation. Stepping out of the black SUV, Jesse ignored the brilliant sun in the flawless, achingly blue skies above paradise. Somewhere, a part of him recognized it was a perfect day for a wedding, but it was a muted, distant part of him, a part that ached nearly as much as the skies. He shoved his hands into his tuxedo pants pockets as he walked, not because he didn't want to see them shaking, but because he didn't want anyone else to see. He had the rings in his right jacket pocket. He'd checked before leaving the station house, twice since. Jesse Stone had rarely dropped ground balls hit at him 100 miles an hour on iffy minor league infields, so he knew he could handle giving the preacher 2 wedding bands without making an error. As skilled as Jesse had been at narrowing his focus to a laser point, at shutting out crowd noise or chatter from the opposing catcher, at ignoring competing theories about a crime, he had taken it to a whole new level. For the past several months, since witnessing the love of his life murdered right in front of him, Jesse had pared his existence down to 3 stark essentials, grief, regret, and Johnny Walker Black. They had become like a noose around his neck to the exclusion of everything else, including his job as police chief. He had done this dance once before, in L.A., after Jen had cheated on him. It had cost him old friendships and the trust and respect of his peers, and, in the end, it cost him his detective's shield. That inaugural dance with Scotch and regret was what landed him in paradise to begin with. So far, mostly due to goodwill, sympathy, and a fair stretch of crimelessness in town, Jesse had avoided paying a price heavier than a hangover for his behavior. Molly, Suit, Peter, Gabe, Alicia, and just about everyone connected to the PPD had done their fair share of ass covering for Jesse since Diana's murder. Yet his recent lack of diligence hadn't gone unnoticed by the Board of Selectmen or Mayor Walker. He had been warned in no uncertain terms to either clean up his act or be put on forced sick leave. But it wasn't the warnings from the selectmen or the mayor that had temporarily shut the Johnny Walker spigot on him. It was Molly Crane who'd done that. On Thursday night, she'd locked Jesse's office door behind her. "What is it, Molly?" he'd asked. Though he didn't look up at her when she entered his office, Molly knew Jesse was annoyed at her. After more than a decade together, she had learned to read the subtleties in his voice and his body language. She'd had to learn. Jesse wasn't a man to give much away, not about what he was thinking. Certainly not about what he was feeling. Just lately, though, there wasn't much mystery to what he was thinking or feeling. And the open bottle of Black Label on Jesse's desk cleared up any questions anyone might have had about his state of mind. "Look at me, Jesse Stone." He didn't, repeating the question. "What is it, Molly?" "It's about Saturday." Jesse finally looked up from his glass. "What about Saturday?" "Listen to me, Jesse. Saturday will be the most important day in Suit's life, and you're the most important man in his life. Now don't you dare show up at the church drunk, and don't you dare disappoint Suit." "Who the hell do you think you're talking to?" "That's a good question. Who am I talking to? It's hard to know these days." He seemed about ready to explode, but said nothing. Molly walked over by his desk, grabbed the smooth rectangular bottle, capped it, and moved back toward the office door. "Give the wallowing a rest for a few days," she said. "You owe Suit that much. You want to drink yourself to death or lose your job, fine. But on Saturday, you need to act the part of the best man." And that was that. Self-control wasn't usually an issue for Jesse, not even when it came to alcohol. He could go months without it, had gone months without it. But as Dix had said to him, it was no more than a game he played with himself. It was like holding his breath. No matter how long he held it, he was bound to breathe again. And what did holding your breath ever prove? Problem was, Jesse didn't care about proving anything to anyone, not anymore. Still, Molly was right. He owed Sue a lot, and Jesse Stone paid his debts. He walked around to the front of the old white church, its clapboards and pews said to have been cut from the same trees that went into the keels and strapping of the whaling vessels built in New Bedford, Mass. Jesse had always been skeptical of the claims linking paradise to a whaling past, but he wasn't thinking about that now. What he was thinking about was a dive into the deep end of a scotch-filled pool. He patted his jacket pocket once again and, feeling the rings, pulled back one of the church doors. Chapter 5. Tamara Elkin was pacing just inside the church doors. The ME, usually given to loose-fitting sweaters, tight jeans, and pointy-toed cowboy boots, was decked out in a deep burgundy cocktail dress that clung to her athletic body and showed a fair bit of her long, muscular legs. She'd been an Olympic-class distance runner in college, until a slip during a steeplechase took her off the track team and put her on track for medical school. The black stilettos emphasized the sculpted beauty of her legs. She lit up at the sight of Jesse, as she always did. Then she tempered her excitement, knowing that he was probably drunk and grieving. Those were pretty much givens these days. But she owed a lot to Jesse. He was the first person in the area to befriend her when she took the job as ME, and there was nothing she wouldn't do for him. She'd always wanted more than friendship from him, but less than commitment. Like Jesse, Tamara was divorced, and, as she said, she was nobody's Miss Wright. For more than a year now, she had pressed Jesse to let her become more than a friend. She'd been careful to back off the pressure since Diana's murder. If and when Jesse decided to let her in, Tamara didn't want it to come with excuses. She didn't want to hear that he had been too out of it to know what he was doing, or that she was just a temporary salve for his pain. A friend with perks was one thing. A Band-Aid was something else. Still, she worried that even after he got over his grief, there would always be one thing standing in her way. Tamara wondered if Jesse would ever be able to get past the image of her doing Diana's autopsy. She had tried to recuse herself from it, begged Jesse to let her find someone else for the job, but he was adamant that Tamara should do it. "She's a person to you, not just another body," he'd said. "Please, I don't want a stranger to touch her." Now he brightened at the sight of Tamara, smiling a half smile. "Hey, you," he said, kissing her on the cheek. "You look stunning." "Hey yourself, Jesse Stone. You don't look too shabby your own self in that tux." Tamara hugged him, and when she did, she sniffed for hints of alcohol. She could feel her own smile when she detected none. She pushed back, looking into his eyes. She was tall to begin with, and in heels, her eyes met his. And with her impossible mane of brown curls piled atop her head, she was taller than him. "What are you smiling at, Doc?" "You, Jesse. Your eyes." "No red, huh?" "No red. That because you used a whole bottle of Visine, or haven't had a drop of alcohol? Look," he said, showing her his still shaky hands. "That'll recede in time." He didn't say anything to that. Not because he didn't believe her, but because he didn't intend to give the shakes a chance to recede. As Molly had said, he owed suit to be all in today, to be present. Come tomorrow, all bets were off. If he felt like drinking, he would. And if he chose to, it would be a small gathering. Johnny Walker, himself, and his poster of Ozzie Smith. What he enjoyed about Johnny and Ozzie was that they didn't do any talking, though Jesse did sometimes feel judged by Ozzie's silence. "You better get inside," he said. "Have you seen the bride?" "Elena looks gorgeous, but you shouldn't worry about her. You better go find Suit. Last time I saw him, he was pacing a rut into the floor downstairs. Jesse found Suit in a bare room with an empty coat rack, pacing as Tamara had described. For one of the few times since they had met, Luther's Suitcase Simpson looked the part of a full-grown man. Suit, a former high school football star, was always boyish in his looks and in his demeanor. All men, Jesse supposed, seemed to lose those last vestiges of boyishness when they were about to exchange vows. Jesse laughed to himself at the sight of Suit in a tuxedo. Though it was well-tailored to his big body, poor Suit looked out of place in it. Unlike Jesse, Luther Simpson was not a man born to carry off a tuxedo. Suit looked up and caught his boss and best man smiling at him. Jesse! They took hold of each other's biceps, Suit beaming at the sight of his boss. Then, just as with Tamara, some of the sparkle went out of his joy. Only Suit wasn't quite as skilled as the ME at checking Jesse out for signs of cracks in his armor without being detected. Relax, Suit, I'm fine. You know, Jesse, I wouldn't blame you if you weren't. I mean, this could have been your wedding day, too. I'm fine. It was a lie, of course. Things might not have been so intense for Jesse had it been anyone else's wedding. Diana had been killed, saving Elena. You got the rings, Jesse? Uh-huh, he said, pointing at his jacket pocket. Right here, Luther. Okay, boss, you can call me that today. But when I get back from my honeymoon, he smiled. I'll think about it, Officer Simpson. Thanks, Jesse. You don't know how much you being my best man means to me and Elena. Come on, let's get this show on the road. I hear there's a gorgeous woman waiting to be your bride. After he said it, Jesse noticed he wasn't the only man in the room with shaky hands.